Welcome to the Exec MBA Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Twitty, and you are listening to a new episode. On this episode of the podcast, I'm excited to share my recent conversation with KJ Sloan. KJ is a second-year student in our Executive MBA class of 2024, and we recently caught up with her to talk more about her background, her career in journalism, how she decided to pursue an MBA, what led her to Darden, the impact of her Darden experience, and so much more. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. And as always, if this conversation is helpful for you, please like this episode and subscribe to the Exec MBA Podcast so you never miss an update. And remember, you can always check the episode description for links to Darden blogs, social channels, and more. And now, without further ado, here is my interview with KJ Sloan. KJ, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Brett.
It's great to talk with you. Here you are, quarter 10, the very end of the Executive MBA program, LR2 on the horizon, graduation on the horizon. How's it feel?
It cannot come too soon. I'm ready for LR2, which is where we're going to next week in Charlottesville. I'm ready for everything that it brings and just excited to get done with the program. It was very, very meaningful, very meaningful. However, I am ready for the crazy hectic schedule to be done.
Yeah, I think this is always a time in the program where there's a bit of a swirl of emotion, right? People are excited for what's ahead, maybe excited to have a bit more time in their schedule, but also a little nostalgic, a little sentimental about what they've gone through, the experience that they've had with their classmates, the relationships that they formed, being in school again, obviously the chance to sit and learn with 120 or so people who are all focused on the professional development that come around every day.
That was probably the best part of this program. Of course, the learning is very interesting, and I appreciate all of our professors. However, meeting those 140 of my cohorts and learning from them, enjoying them, learning about their lives, it was just all so fascinating. I literally have 100 plus friends now that I didn't have 20 months ago.
That's awesome. Well, KJ, let's start by asking you to share a little bit more about who you are. Tell us your story.
So I started in journalism as a young chick. I wanted to do something that was different for me in the sense that I wanted to tell stories. I thought I was a good writer. Other people agreed with that. And I really wanted to get out there and bring attention and awareness to topics that, you know, a lot of people, especially in my community, are not familiar with. So getting the job, for example, at CNBC was a big deal because then I was on the other side of it. I did a lot of local news in the very, very beginning, and I really wanted to get into something that I felt I could give back to my community. And financial literacy is like one of the things that I really think we need more of, depending on, you know, which community you are in. But I really felt like financial literacy is very important. So being at CNBC and working on the stories that I work on, and especially now working on Capitol Hill, I feel it brought a lot of attention to what I was hoping to accomplish for myself in life. And then going to Darden was especially important because it was what I call the fine point that I needed in my life to bring it full circle. Journalism was one component that I've always strived for, I was able to achieve. Getting an executive MBA was the second part. I've always wanted to do that. It was something that I thought I could do, but I wasn't exactly sure. So it turned out to be such a huge challenge for me. And I loved it. I love the process every step of the way.
Well, let's talk about your career in journalism. A lot of journalists out there, but how many journalists with MBAs? It's not a particularly common path. So how did you land on this idea of going to pursue an MBA?
In journalism, you always want to You always want to specialize in something. That's the way I look at it. So we call it beats, having a beat. And I really wanted to specialize in something that maybe not a whole lot of other people are doing. A whole lot of other journalists are doing. A lot of times we look at ourselves as, you know, we're writers, you know, we don't do math. And I wanted to break that. I wanted to break that image that we have as journalists, like, oh, we don't do math. But being a business journalist, I have to do math and I have to do spreadsheets. And at one point it was uncomfortable. Maybe sometimes it still is uncomfortable, depending on what the subject matter is. But I really wanted to break that stigma. And although at Darden, we do call ourselves quants or poets, or even say poets versus quants. And yes, it was proven that I am not a quant. But you know what? Going over to, you know, what I would call the dark side has been so intriguing and so much fun and just opened me up to so many new experiences. I can say that I wasn't a fan of spreadsheets, but after taking decision analysis with Yael and Manel, it is just, and even taking project management with Yael, it just turned into a path of ease, a path of comfort that I probably would not have gotten there without Darden.
Well, tell us a little bit more about the kinds of stories you report on for CNBC or your role there. I think our listeners are probably intrigued. Gosh, the journalists on the podcast, tell us what you do.
So as a journalist for CNBC, I'm senior field producer. I work the Capitol Hill beat. Our topics normally include financial services, so anything under banking. We also follow cryptocurrency. I work as a team, myself and my reporter, and we work together to bring stories about financial services, as I just mentioned, banking, cryptocurrency. We're doing a lot of artificial intelligence now, a lot of stories on that. Insofar as I just had a quick interview on the go with OpenAI's CEO, Sam Altman, the other day in the halls of Congress. So pretty darn interesting, pretty darn interesting. We also do a lot of taxes as well. So meshing what I do at CNBC on a daily basis, along with what I learned at Darden, especially using the case method, really, really was not only just interesting, it was fundamental. It was also fundamental to my job.
So how did you get to this financial services beat? Did you seek this out? You mentioned you're passionate about financial literacy. Did you seek this out or did this job find you?
This job, the actual beat found me because in working for or even in getting the job for CNBC, I knew I wanted to get out of local news. I was working in Baltimore at the time, and I just wanted to expand my horizons. I really, really did. And to be honest, the job did find me. I was just looking to figure out another path along this journalism producing side of things. And it just so happened that I was in the right place at the right time. And then, you know, the rest is history, as they say, but it really did find me. In terms of financial services, it's just one of the many topics that we cover as a niche journalism area. So CNBC focuses mainly on business news, financial news. So in doing so, covering policy on Capitol Hill, covering legislation, bills that are about to turn into laws or not, as we have seen over the course of time, many bills end up just dying on the Senate floor or on the House floor, never to be seen again, maybe in like different iterations later on. So covering financial services just happened to have been one of the many things that CNBC is very much interested in. And working on Capitol Hill just affords me the opportunity to be a part of that on a daily basis.
I'm curious, are there any storylines in the financial news that are really interesting to you that have captured your interest?
Ooh, well, right now we're talking a lot about Basel III. Basel III is very important because it's increasing the capital requirements for financial services, for banks in particular, JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, Citibank, even internationally, like Deutsche Bank has to go through Basel III updates and recommendations as well. I find that to be very interesting. You talked about interesting. Recently, Emily and I did a story on Gallaudet University and how the sense that they might not be able to get funding from various banks for their energy projects and how it's all related to, for example, a bank like JP Morgan Chase having to up their capital requirements may have a downstream effect on energy projects, such as the one at Gallaudet University. And like I said, my reporter, Emily Wilkins, and I just did a story on that recently, and just the complications that can arise if there is not some meeting in the middle between the banks and the regulators. So for me, I feel that's very interesting because it's also near and dear to something that I'm very interested in as well, which is, you know, sustainability.
So you're in this role as a producer, and obviously you've done a number of stories. How does the producer work with the reporter? How does a story come together at CNBC?
Yeah, pretty fascinating, to be honest, and probably not really talked about that much outside of our world because it can be a little complicated. Like, what exactly does the producer do compared to what the reporter does? So here to break it down in very simple terms, as the producer, I do the behind the scenes work, plain and simple. So when you look at television and you look at a report that's on TV from a news organization, there's a lot of, let's say, graphics that goes into it. So the words on the screen, we call them banners. So the things that are basically summarizing what this story is about, that is done by a producer. In this case, for Emily Wilkins, her reports on CNBC would be done by me. The charts. CNBC is very chart intensive because we follow stocks. We follow the NASDAQ, the stock market, the Chicago Board of Trade. So all of those stocks, those charts that appear on television, when we talk about Google, Apple, the FANG stocks, those things have to be created. They don't just appear. So producers like me, we do all of that. We have something else called, you might see bullet points when a reporter is talking about maybe like the three takeaways from a key event or from an earnings call. Three takeaways from, you know, such and such earnings call. Those have to be created as well. Those three bullet points are 1, 2, 3. It's also done by a producer. So I like to summarize it as the behind the scenes work. Also, when it comes to interviews, there's a lot of the interviews that go on television. We don't just put people on TV. We can't do that. You never know what can happen. So we do pre-interviews. A lot of times the pre-interviews are done by the producers, and then the reporters will come in and take it from there, do the actual interview for TV. So that is, you know, as I said, to summarize it, the behind the scenes work. And it's a heavy lift. It can definitely be a heavy lift. And we can work basically around the clock. A day at CNBC begins as early as 5 a.m. in the morning. And we can go as late as 8 p.m. at night. And literally, I have worked around the clock. So it's challenging, but it's fun. And I would not be doing this job if I did not enjoy it. Trust me. A lot of hours whilst getting my executive MBA, it's a lot, but it's been so rewarding. So I wouldn't change a thing, actually.
One more question, and then we'll transition to kind of talk about your Darden experience. But as the story is coming together, you mentioned that the producer does a lot of the things sort of behind the scenes, but how are the producer and reporter working together to figure out where the story is going to go, how we're going to present the story? Like, who has editorial control? Who's making that call?
It literally is a team sport. And it's not just me and my reporter on the team. Then we have our show producers. We have our executive producers. We also have our bureau chief. Our bureau chief also serves in that matter as giving editorial guidance on where things will go. We have a whole team behind the scenes that have such major input. Our planners, our desk. And when I say desk, I mean our assignment desk. I mean, they really have to, number one, think that, or I wouldn't call it approve the story, but more so realize that this story can have impact for our audience, and therefore they present it to our shows. And our shows then decide, hey, I think this is a good place for this particular segment. We talked about the Gal You Dead energy story in relation to Basel III. And one of our shows, I believe it was our 2 p.m. show, several shows ended up taking it, but I think it was our 2 p.m. show, Power Lunch, that, you know, really that thought that story can really have an impact on our audience. We want that in our show. So literally a team sport, man. I mean, we all have to come together and decide what works best. We have to figure out how to frame the story so that it makes the most sense for our audience. We say Basel III, but who knows really what Basel III is? So that's a part of what we do between me and Emily, where we have to, Emily writes the script and I look over the script and we have to edit it. We have to come to terms and decide, does this fit with our audience? Will they know what we're talking about? And if they don't, we have to break it down further. And I think as journalists, we really have a good grasp on breaking things down and making it sound easy to understand. I believe we pride ourselves in doing that.
I appreciate that. Thank you for indulging all my questions. It's not every day, though, that we get to talk about how the news comes together here on the podcast. So, KJ, how did you end up at Darden? What led you here?
Ooh, well, As I said, I always wanted to get my MBA. I always wanted to specialize in something. I didn't want to just like walk away with a journalism degree. I wanted it to have meaning. And getting my MBA was that way of me specializing in something. And in this case, ending up at CNBC was leading me down that path without me even realizing it. So at one point I said, you know, what would really work well is if I got my MBA, like really go ahead and do it. And some life events happened and I wasn't able to do it at the time that I wanted to. So a few years back, one of my colleagues, Stephanie Du, I'm going to call her out. Stephanie Du and I worked together in the DC Bureau. And Stephanie said to me, hey, you know what I just did? I applied to Darden and I got in. And I was like, ooh, cool. And she was like, I think you would be perfect for this program. And I was like, why? She's like, you just would. I just know it. You just would. You always wanted to get your MBA and I'm doing it. I'm getting it. And I'm choosing to go to Darden. And I was like, Stephanie, I can't do that right now. I mean, there was a lot happening at that time. We didn't even realize we were about to be overtaken by a pandemic when Stephanie spoke to me about this. But I remember her stopping me in the hallways. I was on my way to Singapore, actually. to cover Trump. And I said to her, wow, this is really great, but I don't think I can do it. The work schedule is demanding. A work schedule has always been demanding. Nothing really changes there. But just to add something else to my plate just did not seem feasible. And I was traveling a lot for the company covering different stories internationally as well. So I said, it just doesn't seem like something I want to take on right now. Lo and behold, we entered a pandemic. And during that time, I think all of us, we were just all reevaluating our life and the choices that we've been making for so long. And being on a hamster wheel, you never really have the time to do that. And although we were still working very, very hard at CNBC, that did not stop. But I think being with my family, being with my husband and being with my son and seeing them day in and day out and how we just had to adjust to life differently, it just made me think that I really want to get my MBA and I want to do it now. I want to do it while I still can, while my son has, back when I wanted to do it, he was very, 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 very young. And I just didn't see how being a mother and handling the demands of CNBC and the demands of motherhood would work together to then also take on an executive MBA. So I put it on the back burner. But being home and seeing my husband at work and seeing my son navigate the challenges he had of, you know, working online, something that he never really did, I just realized, like, if I'm going to do something, now is the time to do it. He's older. He's able to handle himself better. I don't have to be so, I don't have to hover. I guess that's the best way to say it. I don't have to hover over him as much as I did. It's part of, like, you know, giving him his wings and letting him fly. And we saw him growing up right before our eyes. And I just thought, here's a chance to do maybe something for me now. And doing Darden, I thought, was the perfect time to do it. Perfect way to bring across just this passion. Just go ahead, go for it. Just do it. And so I did.
So you come to Darden, KJ, and you're a new MBA student. You mentioned that obviously your background is not as quantitatively oriented. And so you're going to have to take things like accounting, finance, decision analysis, which you referred to earlier. What was the adjustment for you like getting back into school mode, being an MBA program, and doing it as a working professional?
Wow. I basically took the challenge as it came. I really didn't have major expectations other than major anxiety. I had major anxiety because I really thought I could not measure up to my cohort. I really felt like I'm going to be so left behind here. And I'm not going to know how to handle it. So there was a lot of anxiety, but I got to tell you, I got back into it. It felt like riding a bike, right? You know, you haven't done it for a while and then you get on it and it was like you never missed a beat. So it was awe-inspiring for me to know that I can learn accounting. I took accounting. I was a business minor, to be honest. When I was in school getting my journalism degree, I did minor in business. So some of it was not completely foreign. And I think that also helped me in deciding that I wanted to get an MBA because I felt like I've gone through some of these, you know, finance 101 or accounting 101. So I felt like I could do it. But Darden had a special way of learning. And I believe that is what made me take to it even more. The case method. The case method was put you in situations where other people were forced to make these decisions in real time. And now you are here to learn from their decisions. Whether right or wrong, they made those decisions. And, you know, hindsight is 2020. Of course it is. And that's basically what the case method is. Hindsight is 2020. But we were able to learn from decisions that real executives, real CEOs had to make out there. And I think the alignment of working at CNBC and realizing while we were reporting on certain stories out there, that there were people making really tough decisions. And Darden brought that into focus for me. And I really appreciated that. And it made the learning even more interesting because now, like, hey, I know that person. We reported on him when such and such was going on. And then to understand the decisions he had to make or she had to make behind the scenes really, really upped the learning factor for me.
I appreciate that note about, yeah, like riding a bike, maybe you get back into school, but it typically takes, my sense is maybe about 4 to 6 months or so for people to feel like they kind of get settled in a bit more. You can figure out the schedule that works for you and your family. What did your schedule look like as you were navigating the Corps? Maybe it looks similar here in the elective period.
Yeah, it totally still looks similar. I had to get buy-in from my company to do this because it took away time. It took away time that I would normally have for work, clearly took away time from family, but I literally had to get buy-in. Of course, buy-in from my husband from the time I applied for the program. He, you know, he had to know what was about to happen. Mommy's not going to be around to make dinner as often as she did before. You're going to have to make dinner. You're going to have to step up and do these things. But the buy-in from my job was also very interesting because it meant that there were big votes happening on Capitol Hill to things that were germane to CNBC that our audience would have to know about, you know, in that moment, in that the next morning or what have you. And I might not be there. I might not be there to report on those votes. So the buy-in was real. And I had to make a list of dates and times that I was unavailable. I could not be there for this particular vote. And a lot of these things were done months in advance. That schedule had to be presented to my supervisor months in advance so that they put it on their calendars. So they know KJ is unavailable, you know, from 5 to 10 or 5 to 9 tonight or 5 to 8 basically is when our day ended, 5 to 8 tonight because she has to be in class. She has to be there. And it's important that they knew that and understood that. They respected that. And that made a big difference for me too, because it also helped me to see that me getting my executive MBA takes a village. It takes a lot of people to support me in doing this. And my job totally did because my schedule had to change. It could not remain the same because I couldn't be in two places at one time. I really couldn't. Something had to give. So I appreciate the fact that they supported me on this journey.
I appreciate your talking through how you worked with your employer to figure out the time commitment and putting structures in place so that you could be fully engaged with the program. For prospective student listeners who are listening to that part of KJ's story and reacting to that, know that we do typically share at least the calendar for the first year of the program prior to matriculation. And then a few months into the program, typically in January or so, you'll get the next year. So the second year of the program that you can then go and talk to your employer about. So you have some key dates. You have an idea of when, at least for that first year, your in-person program components, your leadership residency down in Charlottesville to start the program. Your weekend residencies are going to be, you can talk with them about distance learning. But obviously it's an iterative conversation. You want to stay engaged. You want to keep talking with them as you go.
That's exactly true. One of the things about this program is you mentioned weekend residencies, and that required me having Fridays off. So it's about 20 weekends. Am I right about that, Brett? I think it is. Yeah, 20 weekends that you have to dedicate your time to Darden. And it's not, when you say weekends, you're like, oh, well, for CNBC, we don't typically work on a weekend. So you would think, oh, like, that's no big deal. I could go do this program. I don't have to worry about work. But that weekend included the Friday before Saturday and Sunday. So I still needed buy-in. I needed to now have not just, you know, a couple of hours off in the evening for hybrid learning, which was basically, you know, turn on your Zoom, your Darden Zoom, and, you know, delve into like 2 hours of learning a night, sometimes four, depending on your classes. But it also required having that Friday off. And again, major buy-in, because sometimes that Friday, you know, something important was about to go down. One of the things I cover at CNBC is government shutdown. And there were several Fridays that was impacted by what could have been a government shutdown, but I needed to be away. I needed to be away from work so I could be at school in Roslyn, you know, doing decision analysis or whatever it might be on that particular Friday. So yeah, buy-in is very important. Don't sleep on that.
Yeah, 20 weekend residencies over the 21 months of the program. Weekend residencies are Friday, Saturday, Sunday here in Roslyn. There are a couple touch points down in Charlottesville. You have a week at the beginning of the program, week at the end of the program, that are both down in Charlottesville, what's called Leadership Residency 1 and Leadership Residency 2. KJ had mentioned at the start of this conversation that she's getting ready for LR2, Leadership Residency 2 down in Charlottesville, which is her last academic course here at Darden. She'll be done. Coming back to the weekend residencies, programming really starts around 11 a.m. noon timeframe. Your class starts at noon, but you really should plan to be at Sam's Family Grounds around 11 or so to have lunch with your classmates. There's time for announcements, what we call homeroom. And then very full weekend, you know, first day goes to about six or so. Second day is kind of 8 a.m. until about 5:30 p.m. And then Sunday's around 8 a.m. to about 3 p.m. You're going to do 12 to 13 class sessions over the course of those 3 days combined across three courses that you're taking in that quarter. And not to mention, there's typically speakers on Friday night or a panel discussion, what's called Friday Night Live. Saturday, there's oftentimes a class-wide social event that's taking place. You may be going out to eat dinner with your learning team, other groups of classmates. There's just a lot happening during a weekend residency. Hey, Jay, a couple more questions for you as we wrap up here. What's your favorite memory from your time at Darden? I know you still got a little time left, but do you have a favorite memory you'd want to share with our listeners?
Yeah. Well, first, I'm hoping to make many, many more memories during LR2. But favorite memories, I would say right now, our global residencies have been the most fun. I never knew that going on a trip with like 25 people from different backgrounds that you've just gotten to know over time can be so enriching and so rewarding. And not just that, with the global residencies, you're also learning so much about the country that you're visiting. So one of my favorite memories is from Morocco, in which we took a trip with, at the time it was with Yael. And it was just so much fun just learning with everyone. We went to an area where less fortunate indigenous people lived, indigenous to Morocco. And we just saw the beautiful arts and crafts that they made. They made beautiful rugs, beautiful trinkets, and it was all for sale. And the reason why it's a favorite memory, number one, I bought a rug from them It's in my kitchen right now. But it's a favorite memory because it allowed us to see how other people lived. If I were to ever visit Morocco, I don't know if I would have ever gone to the inlands, into the mountains, to see how the indigenous people lived there. I know I would not have. But being part of the global residency at Darden and going to Morocco, it afforded me experiences that I would not have had on my own. And what I really liked about that also is that they planted a tree in honor of Darden. And if I should ever go back there, I would love to go there, see that tree, see how well it bloomed. But it just meant so much. And it was such an enriching experience. Culturally, it meant so much to me to be there. Walking into the mountains was also an experience. It was, I don't know, I'm sure my classmates would tell me, but it was maybe about a 2 mile walk, maybe 3 mile walk, might have been even more than that. But it was such rough terrain to get to where these people live. And then to know that they wanted us to be there. We weren't intruding. They invited us. They wanted us to see how they lived. They wanted us to donate, if anything, to their way of life. This is what they did for us so that we can help them continue to live the lives that they live out there. And it was worth it. It was so worth it. And then to bring that full circle, this year, about a month ago, we visited South Africa. So two global residencies, also with Yael. And that was also a great moment as well, and great memories. But I would like to say, if it weren't for Darden, I would not have visited two separate countries in Africa, a continent that I'd never visited before Darden, twice. So I would love to acknowledge that you also broadened my horizons as an international traveler.
Well, what's been the impact of your Darden experience when you look back on the 20 or so months that you've been in the program? How have you grown? How have you developed over this time?
Again, expanded horizons, expanded experiences, just a fullness that I did not know I needed. I did not know I needed these experiences. I did not know I needed these people in my life. It just made me such a more well-rounded person. I am able to, you know, understand perspectives that I never would have even engaged in before. For example, there's a ton of military people in my specific cohort. That is also an area that I never really had much engagement in. And to know that all of these people, like one of my favorite people, and I'm going to call her out, is Beth. Beth is one of my favorite people at Darden. And to know that, you know, she's flown like all of these cool jets that I would never have suspected. It's just been amazing to like meet these people in the flesh and to know that, wow, we have so much in common, but their lives are also so very cool. And I would not have known that if Darden didn't throw us all together.
Last question for you here, KJ. What's a piece of advice you would share with our prospective student listeners? You shared a bunch of advice as we've gone through this conversation, but maybe a final thought to leave people with here.
Final piece of advice. Be open to new experiences. Just be open. Like, go into Darden. Do not have any preconceived ideas on anything, because it's going to change. It is definitely going to change. I love the fact that I was just open, just let it be, let the chips fall where they may. And I think it was the best experience I could have had because of that. I did not go in there knowing everything, even though Stephanie did talk to me a lot about the program. She didn't talk to me about everything. And my experience is not her experience, and vice versa. So I'm glad that I had the chance to make my own way at Darden. And I'm just so happy that by chance, I did it. I just did it. I took a leap of faith. I did it. And here's where I am right now. And I would not change it at all.
Okay, Jay, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your story and perspective with our listeners. It's great to catch up with you, and obviously thrilled for you and your classmates as you advance and matriculate on to the very end of the program. I cannot believe that you're almost to graduation. Amazing.
Amazing. Amazing. And I couldn't have done this without Darden. So thank you very much for the time and the attention that you guys put into us. On behalf of Class of 2024, we appreciate you.
And that was my interview with KJ Sloan, second-year student in our Executive MBA Class of 2024. As always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover here on the podcast, we're all ears. You can be reached at exec, that's EXEC, mba@darden.virginia.edu. Until next time, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.